Hey, you're tuned into 101.9 CITR FM, located on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded Coast Salish territory of the Musqueam people. My name is Eva Droughty, and you're listening to What's the Story? On this show, we discuss some history of music and get into the backstory and historical context of genres, or just any musical events, really. If you've listened to the show before, you might have noticed that I like to try and take advantage of special themed days or months to highlight particular communities. And so, like, in February, we did a couple Black History Month episodes. And so this is the first week of Pride. It's the third day of Pride Month, so I thought it'd be a great opportunity to cover some queer history today. The fun part of having a history of music show for me, I think, is just having the space to be able to tell a story for an hour about subcultures and artists whose work might not be given enough airtime on other stations, and I really like that that's kind of CITR's goal as well, in general. So in honor of Pride Month today, we're going to be talking about the genre queercore. Right before we get into the meat of the show today, I do just want to have a bit of a chat about some terminology that we are or are not going to be using today. There's a nasty word that has been historically used against the queer community. We're all adults here. I think we know the one. It begins with an F. I'm not going to be saying it today, although it is a word that is reclaimed by much of the LGBTQ+ community, and people find it completely appropriate sometimes to use in academic, artistic, or ironic other ways. Many of these songs, even band names and zine names and quotes and just all of the stuff that we're going to be dealing with today, a lot of them do use the F word, and that serves an artistic purpose for them, which is super valid. But for me, I don't think that there's really any artistic or journalistic merit for me to be dropping that word 20 some odd times in the next hour, so I will be avoiding it or using some kind of alternative words so that you know what I'm trying to say. And that might come off as a bit clunky or awkward, so I do apologize for that, but my thinking with this is that I really do want you to be able to know what I'm talking about, know these artist names and zine names or whatever it is, because if you want to be able to look into this, I want you to have the capability to do so. And we're here to share their stories, right? So you should know, but I'm not going to be saying it. So you're just going to have to think a little hard about whatever code words I come up with to say the word or however I skirt around it. You're just going to have to put up with it, unfortunately. I recognize also that the average listener who might miss this PSA might have varying reactions to the word and just might not appreciate someone using it on 1 p.m. on a Friday, and that's so valid. Like, I would rather not say it either. So that is all. I just wanted to give you a little PSA. Also let you know that there's going to be some vulgar language in some of these tracks, including potentially the F word at times, and I've tried to kind of curate a relatively tame playlist today just to be mindful of that, but I'm still also trying to highlight these people that put that into their art, so let's get into queercore with that out of the way. Queercore is a punk offshoot genre which combines the words queer and hardcore, and I'm sure that many of you know this, but for those who are unsure, queer was a once derogatory word but is now reclaimed by most of the LGBTQ+ community, and it's used in an umbrella term for those who don't identify as heterosexual and or cisgender. And cisgender or cis means someone who has whose gender corresponds to their birth sex. So if you were born a boy and you decide, yeah, I also feel like I am a boy as my gender, then you're cis. Hardcore is synonymous with hardcore punk, and it basically means anything that is punk but is particularly fast, hard, or loud. And hardcore rose with the original punk scene in the 70s, so with people like Black Flag and the Dead Kennedys being forerunners. Because of this, the suffix core is added to genres to denote the fact that it's maybe a bit more aggressive than the overall base genre, or maybe that it has some kind of punk tendencies. So for example, metalcore, mathcore, and there's even jazzcore, which I hadn't known about. But don't get that twisted with hardcore, the EDM genre, though, because that's something that arose in the 90s, and they don't really have much to do with each other musically speaking, other than the fact that they might both have a bit of an aggressive atmosphere. On our last episode, we covered jungle, which is an electronic genre, and we talked about subgenres like happycore and doomcore, and when you're talking about electronic genres with the suffix core, this is a reference, obviously, to the EDM hardcore and not to the punk hardcore. So yes, together, queer plus core means that what we're dealing with today is a punk genre made by and for the queer community. Let's play a song to get you in the mood a little bit, and then we're going to explain the origins of this super interesting genre. This song is called Your Hands, My Pockets by Team Dresh. Welcome back, you just heard Your Hands, My Pockets by Team Dresh. Today on What's the Story, we're covering queercore, which is a punk offshoot genre that grew to popularity in the underground scenes of North America around the mid-80s to the mid-2000s. It was particularly popular in Toronto, which is super cool. It actually kind of got its start in Toronto. There was a big scene also in Chicago, and then LA, Seattle, the usual suspects. Aside from the fact that the LGBTQ+ community had a lot to be discontent with society about, and a lot of content to make angry punk music about, the real catalyst for queercore was that there were pockets of queer folks who felt like their identities didn't quite match up with the mainstream gay culture. Two most important figures of queercore are G.B. Jones, and Bruce LaBruce, which is a dope name. I don't think that's his real name, but love it nonetheless. They both felt that they were being excluded from the punk scene for being queer, and also excluded from the gay and lesbian scenes because their interest in music and aesthetics and night out activities just did not line up. Not only was there no discernible gay punk scene, the LGBTQ+ scenes at the time, as described by Amy Spencer in this great book that I read called DIY, The Rise of Lo-Fi Culture, they were very segregated by gender, which is kind of out of pocket, so like you'd have those gay or lesbian bars and that was kind of it. It was also very commercial, conventional, and upper class, and white. So, exclusionary to racialized, poor, non-male, queer folks, which is a lot of people. If you're interested in a sociological explanation of why and how that was the case, along with a Vancouver case study example, there's a really fabulous paper that I read in my Sociology of Sexualities course. It was called Tracing Lines of Horizontal Hostility: How Sex Workers and Gay Activists Battled for Space, Voice, and Belonging in Vancouver. It's a bit of a mouthful, they always are, but it's by my old professor, Becky Ross, and her colleague, Rachel Sullivan, and it's a really helpful academic reading about assimilationist gay politics in Vancouver's gayborhood in Davie Village. I found myself thinking about that article multiple times as I was researching this history of queercore, and inadvertently, I think they did a really good job of contextualizing and providing more explanation for the gender, race, class, and spatial tensions which produced this queercore movement. I'll link the article in this podcast episode in case anyone's interested in reading it. I do think that you need to be associated with some sort of institution like a college or university to get it for free, but hopefully it's out there somewhere for free too, because it was a really good read. Essentially, though, the case study talks about how white, upwardly mobile gay residents, male residents of Davie Street, formed alliances with police and government officials to push out queer sex workers from the neighborhood. And this was in an attempt to gain political and public respectability for their group, of kind of off the backs of the less acceptable, quote-unquote, sex worker population. And that's that horizontal hostility that they mention in the title of the article, where one population is using their peers to bolster their own image. It's at the expense of the other group, you know what I mean? So then they gain this reputation as the good gays in the eyes of society, and they gain all kinds of monetary benefits, and gentrification of their neighborhood. GB and Bruce were the pioneers of queercore, and they shared this sentiment regarding the gay scenes, as they weren't really progressive enough with their segregation of the sexes into lesbian and gay bars, and they felt this misogyny where gay culture was far preferred over other queer enclaves. Matt Wobensmith is the creator of a zine and record label called Outpunk, and he echoed this, saying, quote, "Gay people often sacrifice the cultures they come from just to belong to something." Another creator and activist, Jenna Von Brucker, was the author of a 1993 zine called Jane Gets a Divorce. She wrote that the 90s gay scene was lifeless. People were humorless and spiritless, she said. And her friends, they always just wanted to bust down, get kind of weird at the dance floor and do the jitterbug at these clubs and lesbian bars, but people would always complain and get them thrown out. She said, quote, "They wanted to go in their stupid jeans and their stupid tucked-in shirt and dance to the same stupid music every week, and we weren't like that. We were a little more lively, so we didn't really fit in," end quote. Now, I know that that can come off as a little judgy, like, don't yuck on other people's yum. If you're trying to dance like that and trying to look like that, you're perfectly welcome to go club to some pop music. Like, that's not cool to shame people for that. But the underlying thing of what she's trying to say there, I think, is really just that this came at kind of a financial barrier for a lot of people. And, like, they were getting judged for the things that they like to do. There was no extra spaces for people of differing aesthetics and differing music preferences. And there was really only one place to go. And these clubs, they were expensive to go to. They were expensive to get admission. They were expensive to get the clothes that you were supposed to wear at these places. And so for a thing that you didn't even really want to do, it cost a lot of money. And that meant that lots of people were excluded from having a space where they could be queer and not afraid. So that's really the main point, I think, that these people are trying to get at. So these organizers, who are obviously very passionate about this, were trying to make a space where queer punks of all race, class, and gender distinctions had a place to participate in the activities that they actually felt passionate about, rather than having to conform to that expensive club scene that played pop music and had these strict dress norms and behavioral expectations. And that's what they did. So I'll explain how they did that to come, but let's play some songs here. This is a song called Mombies by The Third Sex, which is a band and album that was released with Chainsaw Records, actually, that used to be a zine called Chainsaw. It turned into a label. It is produced by Donna Dresch from Team Dresch.
I mean it.
Lie!
You're caught up. Give it back. I'm waiting.
Why did you get over it? I don't know, I don't know. Why did you get over it? I don't know, why did you get over it? I don't know, why did you get over it? I don't know,
up. I'm not you.
Let me help.
Stay away. Don't touch me.
I want you to be happy.
Why did you get over it? I don't know. Why did you get over it? I don't know. Why did you get over it? I don't know. Why did you get over it?
Interested in radio? Passionate about gender issues? Want to be an active part of your community? Then join the wave and become part of CITR's Gender Empowerment Collective. Our show Intersections is every 4 weeks, and we want your voice. We are all about empowering everyone and giving you the chance to speak your mind. There's no experience necessary. Find us on Instagram, Twitter, or email us at genderempowerment@citr.ca.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial. Open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
Welcome back. You just heard Mombies by The Third Sex, produced by Donna Drash under Chainsaw. And then next up was Send Me You by The Butchies. Actually, I think The Butchies also feature a member of Team Drash as well. So a lot of Team Drash going on there. Before the break, we were discussing the political and social environment that made queercore's emergence possible, and next I kind of wanted to get into a stylistic overview. In the early 80s, there were some hardcore punk bands that were putting out songs with queer themes, notably Gary Floyd of the Dicks and Randy Turner of Big Boys. Both were gay men. Not all early queercore bands had queer members in them, though, and kind of the most important thing was that they had the themes and the ethics to support the movement. I think really queer people just wanted to hear songs about them for them. As we know, the genre originated in punk and industrial culture too, but even though it started out with those genres, queercore has become less of a stylistic genre and more of a content-based genre, with working in themes of sexual identity, gender identity, the rights of the individual, and anti-oppressive critiques of society. Today we could see queercore sounding like power pop or electropunk, indie rock, noise, experimental, anything really. It's just kind of the fact that punk tends to be the easiest medium to present this info a lot of the time, given its ethos of rebellion, self-identity, social commentary. It kind of overlaps a lot. Music is a distinct part of queercore because it conveys that message, and it's that form of artistic and cathartic expression of anger, hurt, desire, and passion for change, but it's not the main focus. Much like our Riot Girl episode from March, if you listen to that, the goal is really political activism at the end of the day, community building and dialogue, and all done with this sort of DIY style mentality, with music in tandem with zines, film, art, shows, communities, discussions, essays, genuinely anything. It's all about getting the word out there and talking with people of a similar mindset. Zines, by the way, if you don't know, are independently created and distributed magazines which typically deal with social issues, and they can include artwork, poetry, music reviews, whatever the creator wants, really. It's such a cool concept. I kind of wanted to get into it myself, but I'm just not that, like, my fine art skills are kind of trash. So I could cut up some stuff and stick it in a book, but we'll see. Maybe I will. Watch out for a zine drop. But anyways, in the 90s, zine culture was kind of huge in a lot of underground scenes. Riot Girl definitely took inspiration from queercore's methods of this zine-based punk offshoot. The first zine with gay content was actually produced ages ago. It was in the 70s by Ralph Hall, who is a queer activist in the 70s. I'm going to use some code here, but it was called Cigarettes and Cigatry. Figure that one out. And it included homoerotic drawings, poetry, personal opinion pieces and anecdotes, and political commentary. It was very different from anything at the time, kind of shocking even to the punk enclaves. Nothing really like that had been created before. After this, the zine that was universally credited with creating queercore was called JDs, short for Juvenile Delinquents, and it was written by G.B. Jones, who's a lesbian filmmaker, artist, and musician from Toronto, and her friend Bruce LaBruce, a writer, artist, filmmaker, photographer, porn producer, and actor. They literally did it all, also from Toronto, which is pretty cool. I think that this is a Canadian genre and movement. You don't see that often. At the beginning, they called their movement homocore, but they eventually changed that to reflect diversity of the queer community. And the zine was first published in 1985, and it ran until 1991, which is a very unusually long run for a zine, so good for them. Next up, we're going to play a song, and then we'll get back to kind of how and where these first zines came from. This is a song called Goddess by Longstocking. Every time I see your face,
I get all shy. I admit it, I paint you then in shades of gold. I give it to you. Thank you.
Welcome back to What's a Story and to 101.9 CITR FM. We're broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam people. Today, we're talking all about queercore. Before that song, I was explaining about the stylistic characteristics of the genre and the culture of zine production. The most important zine, and the one that created the movement, was JD's, created by G.B. Jones and Bruce LaBruce. They published their original manifesto in a different zine, though. This was in 1985, and it was called Maximum Rock and Roll, which, super cool, it's still in publication today. If you want to read their music reviews and artist features, it's online. Maximum Rock and Roll, all in caps, it's very cool. I was kind of going through a deep dive of that earlier. Bruce and GB's article in Maximum Rock and Roll explained the history of the word punk, and they quoted the dictionary definition, or at least one of them, which said, quote, a passive homosexual was what a punk was. It was also apparently an archaic word for the wood used for tinder, which you might know is the same origin as the F-slur. So, kind of interesting. Here's a passage from the original manifesto published in Maximum Rock and Roll 1985. Quote, what do you know? Punks are F-words too. Better start worrying now. Long before punk meant mohawks in Maximum Rock and Roll, young boys were being turned out in jail, recruited to serve other prisoners' sexual desires, and labeled punks. These original punks, many of them delinquent minors imprisoned for breaking society's rules, became on the inside sexual outlaws as well. This was the point of identification for the early punk rockers who emerged in the mid-70s. Explicitly playing out the role of the punk in dress, attitude, and the rejection of social norms. This stance obviously included sexual delinquency. End quote. And in this point, they kind of cited Dee Dee Ramone, Patti Smith, and Sid Vicious as early punks in their sexual delinquency and in their gender performance ambiguity. They also go on to criticize the punk scene for excluding women, being highly masculinized and violent in moshing with the straight male tendencies at the time that were often sexist and homophobic and even racist. And while the early punk scene in London was a lot more sexually adventurous and welcomed anyone who is nonconformist, punk and hardcore in the late 80s seemed to grow conservative, which is strange, with this metalhead machismo and like skinheads and violent mosh pits. Not a fun place to be for a lot of people. Bruce noted a kind of high school jock vibe happening, which was totally against what they were trying to do at the beginning. JD's, as a tool, was meant to network and give people the impression that a queer punk scene already existed, and it was to antagonize both punks, who were being exclusionary, and the LGBTQ plus community, who were being exclusionary. JB also quotes Foucault and her ideology. This is kind of her inspiration and intention with the scene. But she said that the, quote, ideas about undifferentiated sexualities, creation of an unfettered liberal underworld where all pleasures are possible, was my inspiration with queercore. The zine also featured erotic drawings and stories, artist features, and playlists like the famous JD's Top 10 Homocore Hit Parade tape, which is super niche. I was trying to find some songs to play you off of that, but all I could find was this Bandcamp list of tracks, and then when I actually searched each of the tracks, nothing came up. I think I got like one hit, which was just kind of shows you how underground that was. But okay, let's hear a song that wasn't off that tape but is quite good. It's called You Look Like a Movie Star, Honey by Extra Fancy.
Strung out again on your hands and knees. not ask for more. You're calling lucky, lucky spits in your eyes. Now you only got your own hand to bite. Till the next one she came running, said that he just asked her.
The AMS Sexual Assault Support Centre, the SASC, is a free and confidential service which provides support to those who experience sexual assault, intimate partner violence, and harassment. We provide services to folks of all genders, including students, staff, faculty, and those who have a connection to the UBC Vancouver campus. We provide crisis and short-term emotional support, legal, medical, and campus-related advocacy, and outreach and educational programs. We are located in the Student Nest, room 3130. For more information on our hours of operation and other resources and services, please go to our website, amssasc.ca, or visit our Facebook page, AMS Sexual Assault Support Centre.
Tribe Called Red is the Hallucination with their new record, One More Saturday Night, featuring Javier Mighty, Tanya Tagak, and more, out now.
Coming back to Queercore, we're talking about the zines that made the movement possible. The original Queercore zine JD's inspired another important publication called Homocore, an anarcho-punk zine based in San Francisco. Anarcho-punk, or peace punk, combines punk styles and aesthetics with anarchist lyrical content. And I wanted to touch on anarchism a little bit because it was the political underpinning for many of these zines. As a political philosophy, anarchism rejects centralized authority and coercive or hierarchical structures. And it's about as leftist as you can get. It's in many ways quite similar to Marxism. The governing body in an anarchist society doesn't exist. If anything, it would be just the concept of egalitarianism or ethics. Anarcho-punks generally distance themselves from the established anarchist sects already, and they focused more on pacifism. Bands that align themselves with these types of views were typically interested in animal rights, anti-corporatism, labor rights, and anti-war efforts. You might have the impression that anarcho-punk, just from the word, would be violent or extremist, but a lot of these groups are more similar to the hippie movement and ideology and practice, which is kind of funny, rather than what you might expect of a traditional punk. So anyway, lots of these creators use that kind of political framework when they produce scenes. As a whole, zine making was kind of a cool concept, because if you were into the music and you went to these queercore shows, many of your favorite artists would probably have their own little, like, on merch table, have their own zines. You could read their publication, where you could kind of hear their take on the world, read their poems, and just keep up to date with what they have to say. This was super important to the DIY culture as well, that they were trying to make, where you could make your own stuff, read other people's stuff, and it was all self-represented. Anything that you wanted to do was fully up to you. You controlled your world, your narrative, and there was no censorship. This was all happening within a community that fully supported your individualism, obviously as long as you weren't hurting anybody. I also noticed that with queercore scenes, there didn't seem to be much exclusion. In these underground punk scenes, a lot of the time, there's a lot of, like, oh, you're not cool enough to fit in here, or, oh, you don't know every song by this person, like, name three songs from this band type beat, and this really wasn't the vibe with queercore. Big bands like Pansy Division and Tribe 8 were very outspoken about their goals to create a supportive network for all queer people, not just to be accessible to those who are already in the scene, which makes a lot of sense. Like, why would you want to just be preaching to the choir that already shared your beliefs and had a place to belong? They were trying to bolster people's egos, queer people's egos, and sense of belonging and voice. So that really does mean broadening your horizons and letting people in. So they mentioned that they wanted to let people hear the music and kind of feel represented and supported, at least until that they could move out of their homes and find their own people and chosen families. Larry Bob, who is the creator of the zine Holy Tit Clamps, hilarious name, there's some really funny ones that I just can't say on air, he agreed to this, saying that he thought word should get out about the underground queercore scenes, that things shouldn't be too secret, and that really other people should be shown that there were more ways to think about things. Alright, I'm going to play another song. This is called Transgender Dysphoria Blues by Against Me. This is a band that does align themselves with the anarcho-punk mentality. I think I actually found this song in an anarcho-punk compilation album. So yeah, enjoy. We'll be right back. After the first few zines had been published and an interest was gauged in queercore, a lot of events started cropping up all over North America. Mark Freitas and Joanna Brown were the organizers of a monthly homocore night in Chicago in 1992. They kind of posted up in bars around town, and this was the first stable queercore scene that was ever carved out. Their last homocore show was on May 20th, 2000, and over the years they hosted iconic queercore bands like Vaginal Davis, Tribe 8, Pansy Division, Team Dresh, God Is My Co-Pilot, Third Sex, and The Butchies, as well as notable Riot Girl bands, actually, like Lois, Bikini Kill, and La Tigra. The music, zine, and film festival Homo Gogo ran in Olympia through the summers of 2002, 2004, and 2006. And Queerruption is an anarcho-queer punk music festival and gathering of just general like-minded people, which started in 1998, and it took place in a different city every year. So far, there have been 12 Queerruptions. The first was in London, and the last was in 2017 in Budapest, Hungary. I think they're still going on. They've just taken hiatus for COVID, I'm pretty sure. It's not every single year anymore. And then the last one I wanted to highlight was called Spew, and it was the first national queer zine gathering, which took place in 1991 in Chicago, and they had two more that followed annually. This one was super important for queercore as a movement because it allowed people who might not have a local scene to be able to come meet people, have informal discussions in a non-panel-based, non-structured way, and they could buy and sell their zines, watch all-ages performances, and watch movies and stuff. So really was a gathering place for people that might not have that where they live, you know? Okay, so that's all I've got for you on this queercore edition of the show. If you want to take a look at any old school queer zines, check out qzap.org. I've really found it helpful for my research this week. It's through the Wayback Machine, so I'll link it on the podcast because it might be kind of hard to find, but it's a publicly accessible digitization project with a huge library of incredible zines from 30 plus years ago. Some of them are single issues, some of them are really famous, but they're all super interesting to look back on if you're interested in that sort of stuff. I'm also going to share one more song with you guys, and when we come back, I'll give you the concert listings for the week, so don't go anywhere. This next song is by Izzy Senadizi, who is a local artist. They are super cool. I've seen them live a couple times. This song is called Cuff Jeans, and it's not punk, but it is, I would say, queercore if we're going off the definition that queercore can be indie, because it's definitely that. It won't sound a lot like the other ones, but I just thought it'd be nice to highlight a local artist. So this is Izzy Senadizi with Cuff Jeans.
Safety pin on string from your ear. Dangle me like earrings. I wanna hang from your earlobes. That's about as close as I can get. Fancy me a perfect accessory for your outfit. Overalls and sun-bleached hair. Spider fingers crawl as you talk with your hands. I found out I'm arachnid sexual, I fear. Or maybe it's your eyes, I'm becoming fluent in speaking nonsense. Do you cuff your jeans? Do you cuff your jeans? Do you cuff your jeans? Do you cuff them? Do you thrift your clothes? Do you like the beach? Do you go see shows in back alleys? Do you like the chats or care what I think? Stickers on your water bottle. Patches onto your backpack, it's purely cosmetic. Triple layered garments on your lips. I can see my reflection, you're taunting me with a gold star kiss. Do you cuff your jeans? Do you cuff your jeans? Do you cuff your jeans? Do you cuff them?
to eat linguine with me on a park bench. I can bring my speaker, we can bump some Radiohead. Lie on a blanket, talk about the earth, how humanity's a curse, how we wanna float up in the sky. I wanna fly with you in parallel lines.
Alright, welcome back. So we've just got a couple more minutes left here of the program, and this is the part of the show where I run through some of the concert listings for the week. And this is also a bi-weekly show, so I'll mention some ones from next week as well, but just keep in mind that typically people don't announce their shows 2 weeks in advance, so there's not usually so much going on in the second week. But I try to keep up with it, and so if I see anything of note over the next couple weeks, I will update my podcast description and give you some info there. So Happening Tonight is a super exciting show that I will be at, and if there's any tickets, you guys should really cop them. It's the Wise Hall, has Black Pontiac, Bleeko's Nuclear Disco, Lavinia, and Sam Darko. And this is Black Pontiac's end of their North American tour. They've been on tour, I think, for a month or two, hitting up places in Washington, Oregon, California, Nevada, just doing the whole California coast situation, and they just got back. So we are so proud to have them back in town and hope that their tour went really, really well. And what else? So tonight also there's a punk night at the Black Lab, Chaos Disorder and Panic, Dust Blaster, Skin Crawl and Quarantine. Also at Redgate, it's Music Waste. So Music Waste Day 2, which is a 3-day festival, Killa Kills, Be Afraid, the Golden Age of Wrestling is happening. And then tomorrow, Saturday, June 4th, we've got the third day of Music Waste happening at Redgate, featuring Teeth to Your Throat, Kill Michael, Jody Jody Roger, MO1E, and Lil Baby, and Outback. Also happening that night, Saturday, June 4th, at Buddha's 109 East Hastings, there's Devin Grace and the Virgin Losers, Rose Asleep, Goats and Lasers, and Western Motel. There's also a backyard pop-up from 2 to 6, so you can DM me for the address. I'll just list that on my description of the podcast, just because this is, like, someone's private residence, and I don't want to dox them. But happening there is live music, tats, art sale, and more. Then next week, we've got Thursday, June 9th at the Fox Cabaret, Winona Forever, Club Sofa, and Kylie V. There's also a stacked show at Redgate with Kamikaze Nurse, Shearing Pinks, Necking, Woolworm, and Stimuloso. This is probably, unless I missed a show, one of Necking's first shows back since their big few-year hiatus, so that is very exciting. Also at Buddha's 109 East Hastings on Thursday, June 9th, we've got Magnolia, Spice Tuna, Fountain Bather, and Queen's Park. And then I'm also not listing everything, just that would be a lot. There's a lot going on, but these are my highlights. Friday, June 10th at Perro's Palace, Terminal Vagina, Firing Squad, Sacrificial Mercy, and Anthropoda. That's going to be a metal type show. Also on Saturday, June 11th at the Slice of Life Gallery and Studios, there's a show with Cheap Flavor, Empanadas Illegales, Jingle, and Hoodie Browns. And lastly, let's do one more. Thursday, June 16th at Lanaloo's, there's Sugar Fungus, Teos, and 1002. Oh, just kidding, one more. Wednesday, June 15th, this one should be good, I kind of want to go. Also at Lanaloo's, it's Super Budget, Nonarchy, Hope Slide, and Cat Larceny. We actually played a Hope Slide song on the Shoegaze episode of this show, so we should really hit that up. Yeah, honestly, great lineups for the next couple weeks. I hope you guys make it out to a show. I hope you learned something today, that this was enjoyable, and happy Pride Month, everyone. See you in a couple weeks.